The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
There's no hostess, hon. You can just take a seat wherever you like.
Forget about it.
Nobody has had a free meal yet.
Correct, did land here.
Sure did. 1947 came out of the sky like a big ball of fire and crashed just outside of town. The government has been trying to cover it up ever since.
You don't believe the crash is real? Well, I need to find where they took that ship.
It's an airbase in Ohio.
No.
Boy, you really want that free meal, don't you? Well, we do have alien crash site maps.
You have maps?
Yeah. To the crash site. And the museum.
You have maps.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, May 25th, 2023. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
In the midst of a global political pandemic of tyranny, resurrecting the events that transpired in Roswell, New Mexico back in 1947 may seem to be a pretty esoteric topic for discussion in 2023. However, over the past few weeks, my attention has been drawn to some new and significant revelations about government cover-ups concerning what are called UFOs, unidentified flying objects, or UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon. The revelations came from some pretty significant sources, not the least of which was Tucker Carlson, in an interview where he was the guest only weeks before being fired by Fox News. And suddenly the subject doesn't seem so esoteric anymore. It's very much part of the greater zeitgeist that we are all part of, especially when it comes to expecting our governments to tell us the truth. Add to that my serendipitous viewing of an old TV series from which today's show opener was taken, and about which I'll have more to say later, and it was as if the fates themselves were trying to tell me something. Something that I intend to share with all of you today, right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because, as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, in all the controversies over UFOs, there is only one perspective from which we never hear. And that's from the viewpoint of denying that UFOs and the UFO phenomenon even exists at all in any way, shape, or form. I'd like to hear that argument, if it even exists. But I never have. What all the UFO controversies are about center on variant theories and conjectures about what UFOs might be. And where you can find denial in this debate is on the part of those who refuse to believe that some form of alien intelligence could possibly be behind the phenomenon, and that anyone who says so is either mistaken or is a liar. After all, unless you've met one, coping with the idea of extraterrestrials and aliens is probably something alien to your experience. Trying to prove the existence of something that is outside the range of someone's knowledge or experience may be one of the most difficult tasks you can imagine. Evidence alone is rarely enough, because evidence, as we all know, can be a two-edged sword, and hardcore skeptics never trust the evidence, while the true believers often rush to conclusions that may go way beyond what the evidence would actually support. I once again approached this issue with two perspectives in mind. 1. The significance and reality of the UFO phenomenon itself, and 2. As an epistemological exercise in the determination of what is true and what is real. Now you're going to hear some pretty fantastic stuff today, and if you're like me, I'm guessing most of it will be new to you, even if you've been interested in the UFO phenomenon in the past. A few weeks before Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox News for being its best anchor and reporter and commentator, Carlson appeared on a March podcast of Full Send Podcast, from which several of his recent controversial comments about the nature of corporate media and big pharma were circulated. One of the reasons many speculated that he was fired for. But those comments, it seemed to me, paled to insignificance in light of another topic Carlson elaborated on during the course of that same podcast, and that was UFOs. I was stunned, in light of what he said, that those comments wouldn't be the ones to dominate the viral messages he was conveying. However, and ironically, in the self-same interview, Tucker Carlson explained why that would likely not be the case. Now, I thought I'd heard just about every angle on UFOs that there is, and most of what Carlson revealed was way outside my range of experience and knowledge. Well, no sooner had this Tucker commentary caught my attention when, lo and behold, David Freiheit of Viva Fry, on May 8th, interviewed a UFO documentarian named James Fox, whose documentaries have been featured on many major television networks. Fox was warning that the government is about to release much more startling information about UFOs, but not because the government wants to do so. And on top of that, his revelations about what actually happened at Roswell in 1947 was like adding fuel to an already explosive issue, an issue, according to Tucker Carlson, that no one will likely even notice. But I'm going to save the bulk of my own observations and commentary for the latter part of today's show, because the amount of material that needs to be absorbed before any comments and conclusions would seem appropriate is immense. There's a lot to absorb and integrate, let alone dealing with, you know, a certain amount of skepticism. And I should warn you, as is often the case, that these original interviews were far too long and detailed to fit into our own show format. So what you're about to hear has been highly edited, reshuffled, and focused on what I felt were the most essential and significant observations. If you want to see the whole interviews, check them out yourself. So, on the return side of our upcoming bumper, we'll be hearing from UFO documentarian James Fox, and it is from his interview that the majority of our audio bites throughout the rest of the show will be featured. But first, here's what Tucker Carlson had to say.
What's one of your favorite topics you've ever covered, or something that you just got so obsessed with?
Well, UFOs, for sure.
Yeah, let's talk some aliens. Why UFOs and when?
I'll tell you why. It's actually the same reason I was interested in Epstein. Because I'm like a completely conventional person. Like, I worked at CNN. I spent a season doing commentary and analysis for Good Morning America. I lived in Washington from the age of 15. My dad worked for the federal government. Like, I am not an outsider. Like,
yeah.
I've never believed in a conspiracy theory my entire life. I lived in Washington. And it was only in the past 5 years when all this evidence would emerge. And I'd be like, well, that's not true. It doesn't seem true to me. Like, I don't know what the truth is, but I can tell when someone's lying. It's like my one gift. And I would see these people lying and I'd be like, why are they lying? Like, I know they're lying, but why?
But what changed your attitude at 50?
The evidence.
Which is what?
Well, oh my gosh. At this point, it's kind of come out actually.
Uh-huh.
The Pentagon was required by the last defense authorization bill to like produce some of their files on UFOs. And it turns out they have known about this since the end of the Second World War, which ended in 1945. Been a huge increase during that war, during the war as well. Huge increase in UFO sightings, in UFO crashes, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out the federal government has been tracking this for 80 years and lying about it. So why? Well, that's a great question and I can't answer it. I have theories, but I don't know. But here's what I learned. The first question is this real? Or am I just being a crazy person who's spending too much time on the internet? Well, this summer, we got a call. We didn't reach out. This person called us. Lexi, who's standing right there, who's a genius, one of our producers, gets this call from this guy who's a tenured Stanford Medical School professor. And he wants to come on the show. Now, this guy has a couple patents. And so he's rich. And he's got tenure at one of the most prestigious schools in the world. So, like, he's not a flake. He comes on and he's like, 11 years ago, the U.S. government reached out to me because I'm an expert on head injuries, on brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries, as a physician. And they had all these court cases from families of U.S. servicemen, over 100, who'd been killed by UFOs. And the Department of Defense was refusing to give them death benefits or medical benefits. And I'm like, and he's like, so they're in the courts. And I was like, there are over 100 servicemen killed by UFOs? Like, what? He's like, yeah. And there are court cases about it. I'm like, why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times? I don't know. But he goes, I'm involved in it. I'm the, you know, I'm one of the researchers. I'm the expert witness in these cases. Holy shit. What does that mean? And he's like, for example, UFOs appear to be attracted for whatever reason to nuclear energy. So at nuclear missile bases in the upper Midwest, for example, nuclear powered aircraft carriers, nuclear powered submarines are all getting buzzed by these objects, including underwater. And in a number of cases, these things have landed on military bases, including famously in Germany, in West Germany in the 70s. And servicemen have approached them. Like, what is this thing? There's this like giant glowing thing on the base. And they approach and they get traumatic brain injury or they're killed. And he studied their brains. And they have, this is all totally real. This is not, this is the Department of Defense, dude. And they've all had this damage from some kind of powerful energy that we cannot identify. So then this guy's like, wow, he's just a scientist. He never believed in UFOs. He's like, this is real. I cannot believe this is real. This is like crazy. He should start to do research on it. He's still at Stanford. And it turns out that actually, yes, these things have been shot down and crashed, and the U.S. government has the wreckage, and it's being held by defense contractors, Raytheon, Lockheed, which are big independent companies but that work for the U.S. government. They're really part of the Department of Defense, but they're separate. So you can't, their sunshine laws don't apply to them. You can't actually get information from them. It's a very tricky way to hide information. And they have the wreckage from these crafts.
Hmm.
And I'm like, really? Are we positive these aren't like advanced Russian or Chinese? No. Of course not.
So is it more like the government or whatever is just this good at hiding it or people just don't care?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think it's too big for people to metabolize. Like if Prince Harry says something stupid, everyone's like, I can't believe Prince Harry. Because like that's manageable. You can like, oh, this douchey fake prince with his stupid wife from Santa Monica. Like I get that. But the idea that we're not alone in the universe and we're getting buzzed by these objects whose behavior defies physics, like that just explodes too many categories in my head. I just can't deal with it. And I think that's part of it. But I'll tell you this, the most interesting from my perspective, but a lot of people who study this stuff, U.S. government employees, seem to believe that these objects are coming from under the oceans. There's a lot of evidence these things are coming out of the ocean, including video of these objects coming out of the water at high speed, or even more amazing, descending at Mach 3 into the water. Then we have a huge submarine fleet, American, but also Chinese and Russian, underwater with pretty sensitive measurement devices, sonar, et cetera. And they have recorded these objects doing hundreds of knots underwater. And they're moving without any visible means of propulsion. So no wake, no bubbles.
Where have we like tracked that?
All over
speed?
The world. All over the world.
Really?
Yes.
On like sonar systems?
Yes, from the submarines. And this has come out. Wow. Like some of this is in the New York Times. So to me, one of the most intriguing questions about all of this is, does physics actually describe the world around us?
I just wonder what would happen if something does come out, more evidence does come out, how the people would respond to
we'll
that.
We'll ignore it. We'll ignore it. So my impression, I don't know this for a fact, but everyone I've ever talked to about it is like, one of the reasons they're nervous is that this shows, and the Russians and Chinese feel the same way, apparently, it shows that our military does not control our airspace, which is like a basic precept of a country, like, this is our country. We control our borders. We control our airspace and our waters. And we don't. So that's really scary. And it shows that the military is not in control. So that's, they don't want to admit that. And the second thing they're worried about is some kind of like mass freak out where people are like, I can't, aliens are here. But based on my limited experience, I don't think they should worry because people are so high and so caught up in Prince Harry. That, like, I honestly think if an alien spacecraft landed in Times Square and started issuing orders, people would be like, wow, that's a trip, man. And then, like, the next day, Daily Mail would be leading with Prince Harry again.
Yeah.
I do think that.
Yeah. So what's your theory on aliens based on all the research you've done? Do you think they're already on Earth?
I think that there's a huge amount of evidence in the archaeological record that these things have been around since the beginning of recorded history, the references to them. The Star Over Bethlehem may be one of them. Here's what I really think. I think I don't know. And I think that in wise people understand the limits of their knowledge and of their perception. And we should all just repeat after me, admit we have no fucking idea.
Yeah, we have no idea.
We don't know what these objects are. We don't know if physics is actually real. Probably not. Like, we don't know anything. We don't know what happens when we die. Like, stop pretending. We don't know where the war in Ukraine is going. Stop pretending that we're God. We're not. And we can't, we don't know a lot. And I just wish our leaders would say that. I think they're coming from under the ocean. It seems the evidence suggests that, but what do I know?
What would your encounter look like if you met an alien?
I'd be super respectful. And according, I mean, based on my conversation with this Stanford medical professor, I would conduct that interview at a distance.
Mm.
Because whatever is coming off these machines is very bad for the human body. You know, super, super killed people, like a bunch of people.
Yeah. Fuck.
By the way, last thing, how can something kill a U.S., an active duty U.S. serviceman or several of them? And like, that's not a story. Like, what is wrong with the media?
Was there any reason as to why they died?
Yeah, they were.
What was the official reason?
It was like an EMP.
Mm.
Oh, aneurysm. They had a stroke, but their brains were fried. And the Department of Defense was screwing the families because they refused to acknowledge that they were killed by these objects, whatever they are. And that was the whole point of the story. It's like these families are like, no, my son or husband is dead.
Yeah,
but I'm just like, what? Why has the New York Times never written that story in 50 years? Like, I've spent my whole life in the media. My dad was in the media. Like, that is a big part of the revelation that's changed my life, is the media are part of the control apparatus.
Okay, James Fox, documentarian. Good morning, sir. Good afternoon. How goes the battle?
Thank you so much for having me on. This is it's exciting.
It's exciting for me because I was listening to you on Rogan. I'm listening to the story of Virginia, which I had never heard of. I had heard Joe talking about it before the podcast with you. And I was like, oh, I really should probably look into that. Hadn't heard it. 94, I was 14 years old and into other things. James, okay, before we get into anything, who are you and how on earth did you get into the career of UFO documentarian?
It's crazy, right? So my father was a journalist, Charles Fox. And so I was exposed to journalism, I guess, pretty early on as a kid, watching my father do it and interview people. And I was fascinated. When I told my father that I was interested in UFOs, I was probably 24. He was just beside himself. I mean, he was like, son, please. He literally said to me, it's a dead end street. There's nothing to it. You're wasting your life. So then he had like our family writing, please talk some sense into James. He's going down this dead end street with this UFO stuff. And they were pleading with me. Your father's very concerned. Like you. So the level of resistance I got in my own family when I first embarked on this journey all those years ago was significant. And eventually I finished my first doc by the time I was 28. It's called UFOs 50 Years of Denial. And I managed to get an interview with Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, sixth man to walk on the moon, which was impressive. He talked about Roswell and whatnot. And then that led me to another interview I got with Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper. And for that interview, normally my dad would take me to his interviews. Well, this time I took my father, and that guy was an iconic figure of my father's generation. He was the last American astronaut to go up in space alone. And, you know, he was just very famous. And he talked about this landing case at Edwards Air Force Base, these encounters that he had over Germany in the like 50s. And my father was really moved by that. Like, he thought, my God, this guy is not selling his story. He's got everything to lose, nothing to gain. And I think that's when my father started to pay attention. And when my dad died 10 years ago, he was one of my biggest fans.
That's amazing. I mean, so you get into it, at 24, it becomes a passion. As a teenager growing up, it wasn't even on the horizon?
No. Like, the first doc took me four and a half years. You know, then I did it, and I sold that to Discovery, and it aired on the Learning Channel. And then I made another doc. And every time I finish a doc, I'd always say, that's it. I'm never doing another doc on UFOs ever again. And now I've learned at my ripe old age not to say that anymore, because what happens is you do the doc, suddenly more doors open and you've got a better level of access. Now suddenly I'm interviewing some generals, or I'm interviewing cosmonauts, or I'm interviewing, you know what I mean? And then I did Out of the Blue. And Out of the Blue I sold to NBC Universal. It broadcasts a two-hour special on Sci-Fi. Thank you, Larry Lenzman. And then I did a revamped version of Out of the Blue, which took me two more years. I mean, every time you finish a project, whatever project that is, you have this, like, when you embark on the project, you have this vision of what you think it's going to be. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of see it. And then it doesn't always materialize into that vision. And so I always feel dissatisfied every time I finish a film. Then I did another film called I Know What I Saw, and that was based on an event I did at the National Press Club with a woman named Leslie Kane, who was one of the journalists who broke the secret Pentagon UFO program on the front page of the New York Times in 2017, ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, with Christopher Mellon and Lou Elizondo. So we had done an event in 2007 at the National Press Club where we flew in 14 military government officials, FAA officials from seven countries, and I made a movie about it. And it was pretty compelling, like very high-level government officials, a couple of generals, you know, talking about the reality of the UFO phenomenon and asking the U.S. government to open up another Project Blue Book. And that was Project Blue Book was the investigatory arm of the Air Force from 47 to 69. It went through a couple of different names. Ultimately, it was Project Blue Book. It was terminated in 69 or 70. But to open up another UFO investigation from the United States Air Force, and we were pushing for that in 2007. Anyway, I made a movie about it. I Know What I Saw. That took me the better part of 5 years. I sold that to A&E, and it was a two-hour special on the History Channel.
You edit, I don't know, at night, on the weekends. Yeah. 5 years.
Yes.
I'll ask the question you must get asked a lot, but how do you know when it's done?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. That's such a good question. I think you're like one of two people in my entire career that's asked me that question. You don't, really.
All right, the UFOs.
Yes.
The number one question, everyone should watch The Phenomenon. Everyone has to watch Moment of Contact. We've been like, the world has been fascinated with this since the 40s.
Yes.
Rogan has an operating theory, or at least it's the lore of aliens, that the sightings started after the use of nuclear weapons, after World War II, and that, you know, the aliens are coming here to save ourselves. All this underlying, why the hell do we not have any just proper video, proper camera footage, proper photographic evidence of the UFOs?
Yes. So there is no question that there was a significant uptick in sightings right after we detonated the first atomic bomb at Trinity Site in 1945. I just put together a little montage of different sightings just to show that these things are happening all over. And my buddy Lance goes, hey, man, we should get a map and put the map up on the editing wall and put pins where these different sightings are occurring. So we did. Look at this. This is Socorro here, White Sands, Holloman, Texas. Look at Trinity. It's right there. Isn't that interesting? I wonder if there's a connection. Like, there must be. There must be a connection with the Trinity thing. So anyway, fast forward. I'm interviewing former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, which was a big deal for me. He was one of the senators that launched this secret Pentagon UFO program. So I'm asking Senator Reid, hey, what was one of the more extraordinary aspects of the phenomenon that you guys learned during this 10-year thing? And he goes, without a moment's hesitation, the connection, the fact that they're coming in over these incursions into top secret nuclear facilities in some cases shutting our nukes off. That was probably one of the most extraordinary aspects. But I did interview a couple of folks, and one in particular was a launch control officer who was at Maelstrom at the time. His name is Robert Salas, Lieutenant Robert Salas. And he said, because I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, this disc's come over. And he's like, it's impossible. It shut our nukes off. You know, he had all the documentation. And I said, well, what do you make of it? And I'll never forget his response. And I could see why he was a launch control officer, because he was very measured on everything that he said, and he was very calm. His voice was calm. Like, this guy could read bedtime stories to your children. He had that kind of voice, you know? And he goes, "Well, James, the way I see it, it's almost like taking matches out of the hands of a baby, you know? It's like, well, maybe we shouldn't be playing with these things. You know what I mean?"
I recall once describing government in the hands of today's politicians as being kind of like putting guns and bombs into the hands of children. Be that as it may, at this point in our presentation, my own observations might seem a bit of a distraction from the main UFO issue at hand. But I found something very valuable in hearing James Fox say that he always feels dissatisfied when he finishes a film. Because that's a very common feeling that anyone who produces a product intended for mass media consumption will experience. So if you're considering doing something like this, or are already doing so, and dealing with this kind of dissatisfaction, it's very useful to be aware of the nature of your discomfort. Everything Fox said sounded like he was talking about my own weekly experience with this show, something I've been doing for decades now, where he says, you know, you have this vision and it doesn't materialize. And if I were to share with you the frustration I experienced when embarking on the production of today's show, it would be difficult to express. I was overwhelmed with all of this UFO content, all of which I wanted to include, had there not been a deadline to meet, which, by the way, is how you always know when you're done. You know, had that not been the case, I may just have given up on the project, which in turn would have left me even more dissatisfied. Catch 22. I recall before his first co-hosting of this show with me when we were broadcasting live on CHRW-FM radio in London, I warned Robert Vaughn that at the end of each broadcast, he would be likely feeling very dissatisfied with himself and or with how the show went, and not to let that discourage him. And he thanked me for that advice because he came to understand that this is an illusionary feeling, one that does not coincide with reality. For example, he explained to me that there would always be something he wanted to say or include in the show that he never got around to because of time constraints, the discussion going in unexpected directions, callers calling in, whatever. But I assured Robert that he was the only person even aware of what was not said, and that the listeners heard only what was said, a complete show with no one left hanging at the end. So, if you or someone you know is dealing with this kind of frustration or discomfort, assure them that it's perfectly normal to be feeling that way, and in the end, whatever they're producing will probably be of better quality than it would have been had they continued with their project unconstrained. It's funny how that works itself out, if you do the work. And of course, the major constraint we have on Just Right is what I call the 59-42 rule, being the maximum number of minutes and seconds that we have to fill in our broadcast time slot, which I guess is why we'd best move on with our theme of UFOs and government cover-ups. Here again, James Fox in conversation with David Freiheit.
Summarize Roswell for those who may not know about it, because everybody knows of the lore of Roswell, but the actual incident itself, I think most people don't, you know.
Okay, what I'll tell you, let's go over the facts first. These are everything I can prove. So in July of 1947, the 509th Bomb Squadron, the only bomb squadron in the world at the time, exclusively responsible for the deployment of atomic weapons, was based in Roswell, New Mexico. They put out a press release stating that they'd recovered a flying saucer. And there had been a rash of sightings are all across the United States. And if you go to any library, any archive, and you look up UFO sightings in June, July of 1947, they're splattered over front page of every newspaper. People were speculating what they were, where were they from. There wasn't really the ridicule factor at that point. And so they announced to the world, we recovered one of these things. Jesse Marcel, who was the intelligence officer, went out to the debris field with a guy named Mac Brazel, who was the rancher who found this stuff. They went out, they got some of the pieces of it, they brought it back to the base, and they were instructed from the higher-ups to put it in a B-29 and fly it to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They put some of this debris on the B-29, and they stopped off on their way to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They stopped off at Fort Worth, Texas. And when the plane landed at Fort Worth, Texas, there was a flurry of media on the ground. And Jesse Marcel's looking out the window going, my God, there's media everywhere. And there's a general named General Roger Ramey. Jesse Marcel gets out of the plane. This is all according to Jesse Marcel, and I'll tell you the other guy named DeBose in a second. Gets out of the plane. The media is bombarding him with questions. The general says, you keep your mouth shut. You let me handle this. They go into a room. He throws a conventional weather balloon on the ground, and they have a press conference. They're terribly sorry. What we thought was a flying saucer. Turns out it was just a weather balloon. Our mistake. Our bad. And you know, Jesse Marcel had to sit there posing with this fake debris, knowing that the real stuff was on the airplane on the tarmac. And they posed with DeBose, Colonel DeBose, Major Jesse Marcel, and General Roger Ramey. Well, DeBose and Major Jesse Marcel went on camera before they died, obviously, and said the original story was true. What we found was not of this earth, and it was covered up. Another part of Roswell that a lot of people are unaware of is that Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who I'd interviewed on a number of occasions, grew up in Roswell. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon. He also had deep intel connections from his time with NASA. And he had told me on camera that what crashed there was not of this earth. And when he got back from the moon in the early 70s, he went back to where his childhood area where he grew up, and he knew those ranchers. And he said the ranchers all said it was not of this earth. So there's a lot of very compelling firsthand eyewitness testimony of Roswell. And the very people that reported on the recovery of a flying disc were the most highly trained hand select unit on the planet at the time. So Roswell, that's Roswell in a nutshell.
Today's specials are Martian marinara, chicken, Close Encounters, crawfish. And Hannah, I think there is one more serving left of the Rocket Man ravioli.
Hey, hon. Do you believe?
Not really.
Then why do you wear the pin?
The only thing is it makes the customers feel more comfortable.
Do you have many customers looking for aliens?
Everybody here is looking for aliens, hon. Hey, this must be the newest thing.
You've seen this before?
Yeah, yesterday. There was a guy in here wearing one just like it.
Did you talk to this man?
Sure.
Did he say where he was going?
No, but he took a map.
A map?
A map to the crash site.
Mel, where is Roswell?
The desert, New Mexico.
What would be in a desert in New Mexico?
Well, a lot of people believe that a spaceship crashed out there in the late 40s. The government has always denied it. Why are you so interested?
Official sources on Siron spoke of a ship that went missing in this quadrant.
Why was it coming here?
Rumors said it belonged to treasure hunters.
Treasure hunters? Wonder what they were looking for.
What does this say?
Commander of the 8th Air Force states that the object was sent to the research center at Wright Field, Ohio for examination.
Ohio?
Well, who knows what to believe? They later retracted the whole story. Said it was a weather balloon.
Seems your government likes to hide things.
What government doesn't?
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. That last audio bite, like our show opener today, I happened to run across quite coincidentally about 2 weeks ago, when I decided, just for the fun of it, to again watch a TV show in my sci-fi collection called Tracker. It had been a number of years since I last saw it, and to my amazement, the third episode of the series happened to be entitled Roswell. Tracker was a 2001 Canadian science fiction television series starring Adrian Paul of Highlander fame and Amy Price Francis. The single-season series was based on a short story by Gil Grant and Janine Renshaw. In the series, Adrian Paul plays an alien interplanetary bounty hunter who adopts human form and the human name of Cole, rounding up and imprisoning criminal aliens who have come to Earth to escape justice on their own planet. I suppose you could quite literally call them illegal aliens in this story narrative case. But did you notice just how exactly the Roswell incident portrayed in that 2001 television episode matched the description of Roswell in a nutshell by James Fox in 2023? And I find myself asking, does art imitate life, imitating art, imitating life? Or does life imitate art, imitating life, imitating art? Or am I just egging you on with a chicken proposition? You know, I can easily imagine someone highly skeptical about UFOs and Roswell in particular, arguing that the narrative presented by James Fox was plagiarized in some way from any number of TV shows and movies that have already reflected the same story, and which helped to make such narratives the stuff of fictional conspiracy plots in the first place. You know, easily dismissed by most people without a second thought. But I happen to know from my own past investigation into Roswell, going back a long way, including in printed news accounts, that both narratives we just heard are pretty much on the money. And it occurs to me that the role of TV shows and movies in quote-unquote leaking out truths, otherwise verboten, is a time-tested subtle means of doing so without drawing upon any undue attention or recourse from the official censors. Same principle applied throughout history, where fictional books, plays, myths, and legends would carry some unmentionable truth within them. So, that was a summary of Roswell 1947 in a nutshell that we just heard explained by James Fox. Now, get ready for Roswell 1996, a label applied to an encounter that did not happen in Roswell, New Mexico, but in South America. And I have to admit that before preparing for today's show, I had never heard of this incident or account that apparently involved the crash of an alien craft on January 13th with the subsequent sighting of aliens on the ground on January 20th of that year. What makes the case particularly newsworthy in 2023 are the latest and very current developments in that case, as again reported by James Fox.
Virginia. So, I mean, that sounds like Virginia. I guess it's...
I know, right?
So explain what happened here to people who may never have heard of this incident in Brazil.
So it's commonly referred to as the Roswell of Brazil. Now, the advantage that we have on this case is that it happened in 1996, January. The vast majority of witnesses are still alive. January 20th, reports come out in the town of Virginia. Virginia is in the state of Minas Gerais. It's about 5 hours north of Sao Paulo. It was primarily known for coffee. I think the population, about 110,000 people. It, right in the town of reports of these strange creatures. There were a number of farmers, people on the freeway that reported a cylindrical shape, metallic object that appeared to be in trouble. They said that it had, it was about the size of a large school bus, maybe a little bigger. And it had a gash in the side of it. And it had no wings, no like tail. And it was moving erratically. And it was, it just looked like it was going to crash. There was a gentleman by the name of Carlos de Souza, who was a ultralight pilot. And he was going from Sao Paulo up into the state of Minas Gerais. He sees this cigar-shaped object. He thinks a secret military craft, he doesn't really know. And he's driving on the freeway, and then he sees it struggling to stay airborne, and it eventually like goes down and plows into the side and on a farm. He jumps off the freeway, he drives up to the location. He said there was a debris field the size of a soccer field or football field. Lots of little metallic fragments, He said they were like aluminum. He picked one piece up and he was kind of just feeling it in his hands and he kind of crumpled it up. And he said when it let it go, it regained its shape. But he said there was a much larger piece that was still intact. And I said, well, how much bigger? He's like, it was, you know, I don't know, about a third of the craft, maybe a fourth, third, that was still intact. And just as this was happening, he said the stench was so strong that he said he had to put his shirt up and he was trying to hold his nose of sulfur and ammonia. And then he was driven off by military trucks that came in from the opposite direction at gunpoint. And then a few days later, you start getting reports of these strange beings. They were about 4 feet tall. They had no hair. They had big, big red eyes. I know this sounds crazy, right?
And I'll say this.
Sounds nuts. I know.
I've seen the documentary. I've seen the witnesses. I mean, I've seen the people who are claiming to be the witnesses. And it's not that I don't believe them. I, in fact, do believe them. The only question is, you know, what do you believe of their memory? Or do you believe that they have this memory, but their memory is a distorted, traumatic recollection of what actually happened? There's a crash in Virginia, Brazil.
Yes.
In the days that follow, young women who are now not young women claim to have seen an alien being, a small...
Unidentifiable being, yes.
Unidentifiable being. People who were claiming from the crash that an individual captured the being.
Yes.
Delivered to authorities.
Yes.
This individual subsequently died of some bizarre infection.
Yes.
Of the body. There was a stench from the being, from the craft, stench from the being, the craft, the hospital where the being and people were being treated. The question I have, it's the same one I asked before, maybe a you know, variation 2.0. No photographic, no video evidence. We're in 96 now. So it's not like point and shoot digital cameras didn't exist or, you know, everyone had a camera. What could account for that?
And I'll remind your audience, first of all, I don't blame them one bit if you don't believe what I'm telling you, because I wouldn't if I were you. But I'm telling you, the testimonial from half the town is incredibly compelling. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence? Absolutely. Do we have extraordinary evidence? No. We have a preponderance of incredibly compelling eyewitness testimony. We are looking for that definitive piece of photographic evidence. We've got a bead on it on five different sources, and we have $200,000 cash on the table for it. So I'm not giving up. I'm not going to just like, oh, I couldn't get a hold of it. Of course, I'll continue our pursuit in that. But you got to start somewhere. I mean, how are you going to even know to ask about some evidence if you don't even know it happened, if you don't even know it exists? So you have to start the investigation somewhere. I mean, look at Roswell. There's still stuff coming out on Roswell. Now it's 1947. Nobody's out there denying it happened or didn't happen right now. None of the government intel siders. And we're just, you know, it's an ongoing investigation. Yeah, we want to get that piece of photographic evidence. I mean, honestly, a lot of people are going to deny it anyway.
I'm just saying, even from my own perspective, show me a video. I will say if it's too far-fetched to believe, I'll say CGI.
I know.
It happened, but people don't know what happened. The witnesses who claim to have encountered en passant the being, you know, they said small, big eyes, looked terrified, was subsequently captured. I was like, okay, well, there's a part of me that can imagine, I'm not saying this to be funny, a very small fighter pilot. So a short person, skinny person flying a plane, wearing some like latex suit, they crash. They're a real human, but in that moment of trauma, everyone's like running by, they see this person wearing a suit, and you know, they might not fabricate, but distort their own memory. The foul stench, I can imagine, ammonia, some form of chemicals, maybe it was a chemical attack or something. So I look for the logical, rational explanation that can fit with what would be the easy to digest pieces of information. And I appreciate the idea of running the documentary now because A, no one would be talking about it. B, few people would know that maybe it's going to be not cool, but rather lucrative if there's money on the table. And also people are looking for their excuse to tell the story, but did not feel that they could do it without being labeled Looney Tunes. But you met with all of these witnesses.
I did. And none of the witnesses wanted to come forward. I can't tell you how hard it was to get those people to come forward. Some of them were like, Military X is like, I don't care, all the money in the world, I'm never going to come forward. We worked on him for years. Carlos Sousa, who watched the UFO crash, he disappeared for 25 years. 25 years.
He's the one who identified the site, right?
You saw the UFO crash, identified the site. You know, Military X talks about the incident. He drove the body around. You know, he drove, let me repeat that. He allegedly drove the little creature, alien, whatever you want to call it, around. The doctors are just coming out. The two doctors who worked on the deceased military officer, Marco Scirisi, the forensic pathologists, said that in their entire career, they've never seen anything like what happened to this individual after he reportedly handled one of these creatures. They put him in the ground the moment he stopped breathing because they were terrified of whatever bacteria he got on himself from that scratch. And they're talking, these doctors last week are talking that the ET explanation is probably the most probable. The doctor who worked on the military officer, yeah, these guys are here. You want to play it?
Yeah, let's play this.
I got two statements, so you should play them both. Right, here we go.
It's Portuguese.
Yeah, just go ahead and read it.
I'll read the captions. It'll be actually easier. You won't hear the back stuff.
Go for it.
This is my first statement on the Chérez case, which may have actually involved an extraterrestrial being. But I think the truth has to be really discussed and put forward by the science. I think it's important to take this to the public. It's important to show the truth. It causes strangeness due to the distinct way he describes this bacteria. He has over 70 years of experience, and he's never seen this kind of bacteria.
All right, now here's the other guy, Giannini. Go ahead.
Yep. This alien brought the bacteria in from the outside. There's the character ET, and there's the character bacteria from ET's fingernails, right? Because they're two where life exists. There will be the cell structure of life from bacteria to creating a man. We are the evolution. There's evolution in every living world that may exist out there. All right, and that's it.
Now, these doctors provided a long form autopsy report, which Leslie Kane had professionally translated by a medical person. And those are being examined. And then the two forensic pathologists that you just saw, they are willing to cooperate with medical sides here in the U.S. to share more information on this.
And let me say, those two forensic pathologists are the individuals who dealt with the deceased military person who allegedly picked up the potentially extraterrestrial being, got some sort of infection from...
Got a scratch right here, and he died. 23 right. years old. And there's countless reports. Minot Air Force Base is incredible, but these military installations all across the United States, the vast majority of them, we cover, I don't know, 10 or 12 different cases. And even internationally in Russia, we cover a case in Bentwaters, England, Rendlesham Forest case. That was housing nuclear weapons back in December of 1980. And we got the deputy base commander, Colonel Charles Holt, who had his pocket tape recorder out with his man at night, seeing these objects shooting beams of light down into the weapons storage area. You can Google the tape and listen to this guy's voice.
I heard the tape.
Phenomenal.
I heard that part. I heard the recording. And the only thing I continually ask myself is these incursions are, you know, occurring, or they're having these incidents at military bases. Is there no CCTV footage? What explains the fact that there's no video footage, video evidence of any of this happening at the most secure locations anywhere?
Look, people think that the government suddenly had this epiphany that the general public deserved to know more about the phenomenon, and suddenly started, you know, pushing for transparency and release of evidence. That is absolutely not the case. What happened was we had a couple of intel insiders that felt that it was unjustified, the excessive secrecy on this topic, and took a huge gamble with their freedom and walked out of the Pentagon with a bunch of evidence and plastered it onto the front page of the New York Times. And now the government can't put the genie back in the bottle. And people want to know, where's the evidence, right? Well, we have some. We have some photographic evidence. We have some stuff that's leaked out. But where is the evidence? Where are these high-resolution photographic images, the satellite images. So I have spent the last, well, just a couple months ago in Washington, D.C., and I've met with Intel insiders. Now, they can reveal some stuff, but they have to be careful. But they're talking about there's a wall of secrecy. And I'm not talking one, I'm not talking two, three, four, five plus people with credentials that I just interviewed. And I'm putting a laser-like focus on where is this evidence and why can't we see it and who has the authority to release it, right? We know when I interviewed Senator Harry Reid, what leaked out of the Pentagon, you know, the GoFast, the gimbal, all those videos, Tic Tac's pretty extraordinary case. I mean, you know, you got multiple eyewitnesses, you got radar confirmation, you got visual confirmation, you've got cockpit recordings on the FLIR. I mean, wow, that's pretty compelling stuff. But according to all these people that I've interviewed, including Senator Harry Reid, who launched the ATIP program, that's just the tip of the iceberg. The real compelling evidence is just behind this wall of secrecy and their justification for not releasing it to us. And I just interviewed people that have seen it, okay, just a month ago, 2 months ago. And I'm like, okay, well, why can't, because when they had the congressional hearings, the images that they put forth were a joke. Like half the time I couldn't even see what they were talking about. Like, what is that? Like, oh, you see this little blob, you know, it's like, yeah, sure. Well, so the easier it is for them to explain, the blurrier, the more ambiguous, the more likely we'll be able to see it. The high res satellite imageries, 4K of craft that we can't explain, they do not want that out because they can't explain it. But they can, you know, erase all that other data, doesn't have to tell us exactly where these things are and release it, but they don't want to do it because the more difficult it is to explain, the less likely it'll ever be made public. But I'm honestly convinced that this stuff is coming out, will continue to come out, and Congress, they're getting hip to what's going on right now.
If and when there's a follow-up, please do me the honor of coming back on and talking about it, because I love it. I mean, I know what I believe. I know what's more probable than not. I know what's provable and what's been proven. I know what I want to believe. And I also know what I have to remain healthily skeptical about, even when it comes to stuff that I want to believe. So
we got to continue holding the government's feet to the fire. The evidence is there. I'm going after it. I'm not alone. There are a lot of other people that are going after it. Our elected representatives are now going after it. So this is going to be a very exciting next couple of years. Mark my words.
And in that spirit, let's review the UFO essentials of what we've just heard over the course of today's broadcast. Let me begin with the points that, to me at least, were relatively new. For my part, I have to confess, I was utterly unaware that any human beings, whether in the military or otherwise, were ever killed because of their contacts with UFOs. Over 100 U.S. servicemen killed by UFOs? And we've learned that a danger to human life can be caused both by radiation of some sort emanating from the UFOs themselves, as reported by Tucker Carlson, and by some kind of bacteria contracted as a consequence of a scratch received from a direct physical contact with one of the occupants of these UFOs, as reported by James Fox. But specific sightings and incidents aside, most of everything else we heard has really been part of UFO folklore since the beginnings of the phenomenon. Anyone who's followed the UFO phenomenon, even on a casual basis, would likely be aware of the narrative that they've most frequently been sighted around sources of nuclear energy. It's also been known since day one that the behavior of these UFOs appears to defy the laws of physics as we understand them. And above all, it has always been known that the government has been lying about UFOs, lies that they could easily get away with given that UFOs and what they might represent are alien to the experience of most people. They have nothing else against which to measure the truth or falsehood of what the government was saying. And as Carlson said, the evidence has kind of come out. The files on UFOs, they've known about it since 1945 and earlier, that the federal government has been tracking this and lying about it. Now here are some of my own wild speculation about what we can deduce from the narratives we've been reviewing. And I'm going to accept that what we've heard is valid until demonstrated otherwise. I find it interesting that these UFOs are apparently able to shut down nuclear energy sources, but have never done so, at least there's no report suggesting this, around, say, nuclear submarines or power plants. This would suggest some kind of benevolence on their part if they were able to do that. And if it is true that they originate from under the ocean, well, you can certainly understand that as residents of planet Earth, they wouldn't want the planet to be polluted by any kind of nuclear fallout. Moreover, the human deaths attributed to UFO contact do not appear to have been caused by any aggressive or initiatory act of violence on the part of the aliens. Those who died from mere exposure to the radiation emanating from an alien craft, and who died from an infection started by an accidental scratch, certainly not by an attack, would suggest that no open hostility is being intended against humanity. And the fact that they have apparently landed on military bases and not destroyed them or otherwise rendered them inert would also suggest this. As to their origin being under the sea, given what we can observe with regard to the capabilities of these UFOs, and in conjunction with the mountains of data and observational accounts, I'm inclined to believe that these things are capable of going anywhere, whether under the ocean or outer space or to other planets. And that would certainly explain Carlson's narrative that the military is concerned that this demonstrates that the military doesn't control our airspace. That seems reasonably plausible, and if so, perhaps the secrecy emanating from institutions like the Pentagon has less to do with keeping secrets from we the public than it has to do with keeping secrets from they, the competing militaries elsewhere in the world. For our part, on Just Right, we have only twice before discussed the UFO phenomenon on this show, and pretty much everything that there was to say about it in the broader discussion, we pretty much covered then. And not only that, we also heard about Robert Vaughn's own UFO sighting experiences. Not one, but two. And of course, there was Roswell and what we were saying about Roswell back then. And in this regard, I'm referring specifically to two of our May 2010 broadcasts, where our UFO discussion took up the entire May 13th broadcast and flowed over into part of the next broadcast on May 20th, shows 151 and 152. That was the first and last time we talked about UFOs until the issue was again thrown onto the main stage 2 years ago when we were being informed that the U.S. government, the Pentagon specifically, was about to declassify some UFO material. And one of the leading media voices in that development, again, was none other than Tucker Carlson. And we discussed that event on our June 10th, 2021 episode, number 710, when we reported that after decades of official denials about UFOs, the U.S. Pentagon was expected to publicly release what it knows about this phenomenon. And at the heart of the issue had been the release of photos and other data about sightings of UFOs that were called Tic Tacs, owing to their shapes resembling the popular candy of the same name. And you know what? Given the description of the craft that crashed in South America, sounds like a Tic Tac to me. Any way you look at this, it sounds like there are some major revelations yet to come in the very near future about this phenomenon, and I have to ask, as did Carlson, how is this not a major story? And I have to conclude, as did Carlson, that the media are part of the control apparatus. Like Tucker Carlson, I'm certainly not expecting the world to react in shock and awe to any particular revelations about alien presences on this planet. If we need to be in shock and awe about anything, it is about the persistent behavior of our governments, a pattern of behavior that encompasses everything from UFOs to COVID, climate change, and war itself. If UFOs are alien to our experience, so too has been the behavior of our governments over the past few years, which regrettably we'll have to keep maintaining an eternal vigilance against with our own UFO conspiracy, namely a unified freedom offensive. Mark my words, which you can do once again when you join us next week on our continuing journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be
all right, we're still taking calls on those UFO sightings. I'm on the line with Jennifer, who claims to have actually met aliens.
Gary, I have been sucked up by alien spacecraft many times.
Uh-oh.
And I can tell you, they are among us.
Really? Now, what do you suppose they want?
Well, They want my eggs. To start their own alien race.
Whoa, thanks for calling. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I saw four aliens in a car. I think it was a Rambler.
Whoa, stylish.